Hey, everybody. Dan and Charlie Kirk Show. James Lindsay sits down for a long-form conversation about Pride Month, CRT, the Marxification of education, and more. James Lindsay is really special. I enjoy having him on the program. Make sure you support our program at charliekirk.com/support and get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com.
Special guest, good friend of mine, and one of the most important fighters for liberty in America, James Lindsay. How you doing, man?
Hey, Charlie.
You are always working on something. You just published your education book on Paulo, is that right?
Yeah, Paulo.
Tell us about it.
Paulo Freire, yeah, the Marxification of education, and it's about how Marxists have stolen our education system. And in fact, there are kind of two ways that they've stolen education. They stole the purpose of education. It went from being that the purpose of education is to create educated citizens who can be productive in everyday life. So they learn actual facts, they learn how to think, they learn values, virtues, and so on, so they're good, productive citizens. They stole that and turned it into, this is so you can get credentialed to get a job. And which, when they steal the credentialing, they can then steal the, well, we're only going to hire people who have the, you know, the right competencies, so you got to have your welding competency, maybe, if you're going to do that. But you also need your LGBT and your racial sensitivity competencies, and they can kind of transform who can become a peg to fit into their economy. But then the book focuses on the other part. They stole the mechanics of education. And so Paulo Freire's idea was that true education is a political education. So he's a Marxist. So what he means is a Marxist indoctrination. How do we understand the concrete conditions of our lives, as he said it, through the Marxist lens? So the teacher becomes a facilitator into the Marxist worldview of whatever is relevant to your life now. They call it culturally relevant teaching today. And so his idea was that the education should proceed by making the academic lesson what he calls a mediator to political knowledge. So if I do a math problem with you, whatever the contents of the math problem, maybe it's a word problem about, you know, people drive to an amusement park, it's 50 miles away, they've driven 30 miles, how much further, right? That's a simple word problem, second grade subtraction. Well, the teacher is going to engage the students by saying, who's ever been to an amusement park? And some kids raise their hand and some don't. Well, why is it that some of you have been and some of you haven't? Well, not everybody can afford it. And now they get to have a conversation about socialism, race, or sex or sexuality, or whatever they can fit off of whichever one of these other topics. And so the mechanism of education is also stolen. My motivation to write it was I talk to parents all over the country all the time, and they say, I know they're doing CRT. I know they're doing queer theory, the gender ideology. I don't know how they're doing it. I don't know how they get it in. I look at the curriculum. It looks fine. If they show it to us at all, I don't know how it's getting in. And I wanted to pull back the mask and show the mechanism.
And it's through the training of the teachers, too. It's not always through textbooks, not always through things you can detect, even if you take over a school board, right?
That's right. It's primarily through the way the teachers are trained to engage the material.
It's like praxeology?
Praxeology or praxis. That's right. Yeah. And then the second thing is that it's a lot of using third-party materials. So there's what's in the textbook, and then there's what, say, a third-party proprietary supplemental education outfit provided, that since that's third-party and proprietary, you can't get that from a Freedom of Information Act that's hidden behind copyright. Parents can't see it. Or it's what, you know, hey, we're in the middle of class, we're covering a topic. Don't we need to know a little bit more about rhinoceroses or whatever? So then the teacher goes and Googles whatever they feel like Googling, and then whatever the search pulls up.
So a question I commonly get, and I think there's mixed answers to it, is how much of this was, let's just say, a result of a really tragic accident, or how much of this was centralized, planned, and plotted, because there's agreement. Since the 1960s or 70s, the education system has been taken over by Marxists.
Right.
Is it just that they were relentless and they were pressured through their institutions and then they just got really lucky and no one stopped them? Or was there a whiteboard in the 1960s, James, of funders, academics, people in culture? They said, first we're going to do this and then that. We're going to... Is it the Rudy Dutschke, you know, long march to the institutions? Accident... A tragic accident versus a purposeful conspiracy.
I think there was a lot of purpose behind it. There was definitely organizations, and there were things being funded, and there were different outfits. For example, a lot of the sex ed stuff, there's an organization called SIECUS, S-I-E-C-U-S, mm-hmm. that seems to be, I forgot what that all it stands for, sexuality is the yeah, S,
whatever.
I think.
But piles of trash is what
yes,
it stands
and
for.
And so they have very diligently been making sure things get funded to bring more and more in that of the mm-hmm. sexual education stuff in and letting that get more and more radical over time. So some of this whiteboard stuff happened. The march through the institutions, I think, was a lot more, not organic, but...
Decentralized?
Decentralized, yeah. So in 72, for example, you have Herbert Marcuse writing Counter-Revolution Revolt. The big riots of the 60s failed. America's pissed off. We don't want this stuff happening in our society. So what does he say in this book? He's like, oh, it didn't work. You know, and he's angry and he's writing this book and he says, what we're going to do is we're going to go into everything. We're not going to go out in the streets and throw a fit anymore. We're going to go into the professions. We're going to learn a computer program and we're going to take our philosophy with us and we're going to bring it to the office. We're going to, he says, infiltrate education at all levels is explicitly one of the handful of directives he actually writes down in the explicit education at all levels. And so then in 2015, there was a book by a guy named Isaac Gottesman, kind of a not famous Iowa State professor of education, Marxist. And he wrote a book called The Critical Turn in Education that is a historian, like a history of how they did this, how they transformed education. This has been a complete guidestone for me to understand what they did. And the first sentence of that book, it says, where did all the 60s radicals go? Not to the religious cults and not to yuppiedom, but to the classroom. That's the first sentence of the book.
What year was that published?
2015.
Yeah, recently. So... They saw momentum, and then they repopulated themselves. And then once you control the institutions, then you get to control who comes in. It's a force multiplier, right?
Well, so what they call this in the Marxist theory is the problem of reproduction, which has nothing to do with reproduction. It has to do with the fact that
society... No, it's their own parasitic replication.
It is. It's that they see that the society reproduces itself through its institutions. And in particular, education. So if we take the schools and we build the school out, and the idea of the school is we're going to educate citizens to be productive members of our society and get good jobs in our economy, and that's the objective, then what we're going to do is we're going to program kids to reproduce society in the next generation, which, in fact, we want to do. And we want our successful society to continue to grow and prosper and to bring the blessings of liberty to our children and so on, and our grandchildren and down the generation. They said they had to figure out how to hijack that.
Yes.
And that was the deliberate program that the educators in the 60s, but more in the 70s and 80s, Marxist educators were trying to solve the problem of reproduction. And in the 70s, they basically gave up on it. And then they realized, though, that if they can actually go in and start capturing colleges of education, it all runs downstream from colleges of education. If you get the colleges of education, you get the teachers. If you get the teachers, you get the students. You get a generation of students. Now you have the next generation of professionals. So then you get a whole kind of force multiplier, all the professionals. You want to go to law school or you want to be a lawyer? How do you do it? You go to law school. Well, you indoctrinate them in law school. You indoctrinate them in their undergrad. You indoctrinate them in the high school on back. And then you're going to take over law in two generations. You're going to take over medicine in two generations.
Take over the military.
Take over everything. Military, law, media, everything. And education became the key. And they focused a ton of effort and energy into that.
Just like a bacterial infection, it doesn't stop until it's taken over everything.
That's right.
And one of the things they're focused on most, and they're attempting, which is why we're here in Nashville, is the church.
That's right.
They've taken over part of it, mostly the seminaries, but the church has still had some resistance to the parasites, to the maggots. Why do they want the church so badly, they being the Marxists?
Well, I mean, there's a few reasons, but let's go back in time. You mentioned Rudy Dutschke, and he says the long march to the institutions, and that's explicitly what Marcuse invoked in Counter-Revolution Revolt that I mentioned. So this isn't abstract. What Dutschke was basing his program off of, and what Marcuse was basing his program off of, was the work of a theorist and an activist. The activist is very famous. His name was Mao Zedong. And he put into practice a system to transform education, transform the Chinese society. And the theorist is also somewhat less famous, but very well known now, Antonio Gramsci. And the link between them, letters from prison or something, right? Yeah, the prison notebooks. And so the saying in academia, at least, is Mao did what Gramsci thought. And what Gramsci wrote in the 20s was that socialism is precisely the religion that must overcome Christianity. That's a direct quote. But what he said is that there are five distinct areas of cultural production that produce what he called cultural hegemony that has to be infiltrated and transformed from within. That's where the Long March comes from. And what he said those five areas are religion, family, education, media, and law. So they recognized very early, and Gramsci put special emphasis on the role of religion. We must get inside of religion to change it. So now we come fast forward to 2016. And in 2016, Klaus Schwab puts out, World Economic Forum executive chairman, puts out a document on the role of faith in transforming the world. And he says that values cannot be justified by the intellect alone. That requires faith. Mm. And so we have this bridge across a century of the idea that if you're actually going to transform the cultural values of a society, it's not enough to get into the schools and change their minds. You have to get into their souls and their hearts and transform them. And the place that that's going to happen is in churches primarily. So they have to infiltrate and get inside churches to transform the meaning of the gospel, to transform the meaning of
biblical inerrancy.
Everything.
Right. Yeah.
And this, of course, is we tie back to Freire in the book, because what was Freire? A liberation theologian. And what did he write in The Politics of Education?
Remind our audience, what is a liberation theologian?
Oh, that's a Marxist posing as a Catholic. That's the simplest definition, that there's a new theology, a new interpretation of Catholic doctrine, that the entire thing is to minister to the poor and to overcome the oppression of poverty. And so Freire is a liberation theologian. He writes a book. The book is 1986. Mm-hmm. It comes out. This book is called The Politics of Education. It's the book that gets him launched into the North American scene. Chapters 8 and 10, what does he talk about? Education? No, the church. And what does he say? He says that educators and learners must go through their own personal Easter, where they die to the world of oppression and are reborn on the side of the oppressed. They have to live their own personal Easter, because that's where you transform values. He says that the Easter that Christians celebrate is just a commemorative date on the calendar. It's empty. It celebrates death, not life. A complete inversion and perversion of Christian doctrine. So you can see that they had to get into this kind of mixture of education and faith in order to transform not just intellect, but values.
And the woke, and we're gonna play a game in the next segment that you're gonna love, where I'm gonna ask you to define all these terms, as you know, in one bumper sticker, right? Like, because I think our audience will love it. But I think people have an approximation of what the woke is. The woke is it completely at odds with Christianity and the West.
Yeah, it's an inversion that's meant to look like a counterfeit and then supplant it from within.
But it appropriates some of the proven elements of Christianity.
Yes.
Original sin, atonement for those sins, but actually no eventual forgiveness or, you know, let's just say, freedom from them, correct?
Correct. No, the process becomes that you are, in their own words, again, the same book, Politics of Education, you have the foreword written by an educator, a Marxist educator by the name of Henry Giroux, and he says that Paulo Freire's mission is so beautiful because it's prophetic. And he says, what does it mean by being prophetic? He says, well, it's prophetic in the sense that it calls us to build the kingdom of God here on earth in allegiance with the oppressed.
Wow.
So it's extraordinarily like a toxic perversion and inversion of the true Christian doctrine, but using Christian language, Christian motifs, things that'll resonate with, you know,
Christian
kind of
archetypes.
All of it. All of it.
Most pastors don't understand the threat. What you said, I want you to say this on stage when you speak, that one of the stated goals of Gramsci was to make socialism the predominant religion over Christianity.
That's right. It must overcome Christianity and replace it.
And so Marxism is directly at odds against Christianity. At least from, I love your take on this. You're not a Christian yet. I'm working on that. Why do you think Christians are so scared? Because now you've been an outsider. You spoke a lot of churches. Why are they so scared to speak out? Like, what is your hypothesis? You must think this. Like, you must have a speculation, right?
You know, I don't want to come off. I don't want to make anybody look bad or anything like that. But the truth is that we're all tempted by the trials and the values, the things that are very worldly around us. So there's your status, there's your community that you live in, there's what people are going to think. the, you know, if you rock the boat too hard, you're going to upset maybe it's some of the people that come to your church, maybe some of the people that pay for your church. Maybe it's just that you're going to look weird or you're going to end up on the news. There's a lot of reasons that, you know, maybe there's some appointment to some kind of a, you know, speaking circuit or a whatever that you're cushy and you're hoping to be able to get. But if you make people too nervous around you, whether you said the truth or not, you make people nervous around you, maybe they just pass you by. There's a lot of things, I think. Christians, I've noticed in particular, are very sensitive also to the sense of their legacy, how they're going to be remembered in terms of how they contributed to the church or to the faith or whatever else, especially theologians. And so...
That's interesting.
The threat that will tar your legacy as that of a, you know, white supremacist or whatever is a big threat for some of these people.
Of course, it's just rooted in lies and deceit. So it just something I struggle with, and it challenges me. So I want to talk. We're going to do the lightning round in the next segment. And then I'm also going to have you explain to me why do these corporations continue to embrace the queer stuff, even though it is now proving it could hurt their bottom line.
Thank you.
It's not a guarantee.
So important. Thank you.
I'm confused by it. I am. And there's usually I get clarity on this stuff. This one's a challenge because from the gay Ford Raptor to the North Face trans to the Target tranny stuff. Oh, it's so simple, but not for me.
This is Charlie Kirk, and we're saving babies at Preborn. What are you doing today? When you introduce a girl to her baby by providing an ultrasound, you're giving her the truth at the most important time in her life. And more than 85% of the time, when she sees the baby and hears that baby's heartbeat, she will choose life. And what better time than to do it than May, the month we celebrate motherhood. $140 gives just 5 mothers a free ultrasound and saves babies. $280 can save 10 babies. And just $28 a month can save a baby a month for less than a dollar a day. And a $15,000 gift will provide an ultrasound machine that will save lives for years to come. Whether you want to save one baby or five or hundreds, that opportunity is just a phone call or click away. Maybe this month you could provide ultrasounds in honor of your mom. Check it out. Preborn is wonderful. Go to preborn.org/Kirk. I am a donor and you should be as well. Call 833-850-BABY. That's 833-850-2229. Or go to preborn.org/Kirk. Great organization. preborn.org/Kirk.
All right, James, let's do a lightning round here. You have to bumper sticker them. I stole one of your bumper stickers, right?
Good.
Somebody says, oh, Charlie, what does woke mean? I said, call everything racist till you control it.
That's
not bad, right?
Yeah, that's right.
How would you say it even better in James Lindsification?
Well, for woke, it's a little broader than race.
Okay.
But it's to call everything bigoted.
Unjust,
until
maybe?
You control it. Yeah, it's bigotry. Everything's bigotry unless you control it.
So it's a means to power.
That's right. That's right. That's all it is.
So, okay, let's do... So it's critical race theory.
Well, that's call everything racist until you control it. Or that the fundamental operating principle of our society is systemic racism that must be overthrown.
Marxist.
Marxist is that the fundamental operating principle of society is, in fact, economic class. And that's deterministic on who you are. So we have to seize the means of production of mankind to transform
it. So let me ask you, is that still true now that most Marxists actually don't focus on economics?
Well, most... This is complicated because there are still classical Marxists who do, and they hate
very
the woke.
Very few, though.
But they hate the woke.
Where are they, James?
Well, I mean, we got right now this woman, what's her name? I sent you a text about her, Sansara or whatever.
Sasha whatever?
The Taylor woman, Sansara Taylor or something like this.
One of them went on Prager. She was okay.
Well, this woman is a neo-communist of the Bob of Vakian or
but
whatever
But don't we
style.
Miss those economic Marxists because they're so easy to defeat and prove wrong? Because material prosperity is something actually most Americans like.
It doesn't work in the United States. And in fact, the Marxists of the 20th
century admitted it.
They said capitalism, in their own words, and I quote, delivers the goods.
So they had to shift towards a Marxist, but a poor man's version of Marxism by using power dynamics or class struggle, but reappropriating them to black and white or male and female or, you know, ordinary and queer. Is that a fair way to describe what's happened?
So the way I explained it at the European Parliament last month was that I said it's like genus and species, right? There's a genus of cats.
Yeah, sure, got it.
All these different cats, lions, tigers, house cats, they're different cats. And so you got Marxism's like a lion, and you got critical race theory's like a house cat, and you got, you know, queer theory's like a puma or something like that. They're all the same thing, but they've chosen different aspects of
society. Yeah, but I don't know if I agree. I'm not going to say I disagree, but I don't think I understand that fully. For example, there are people that love money, love profit, but they're fully on board for Marxist power dynamics when it comes to race, So they're not economic Marxists.
That's
so
right.
It's something else.
Yeah, they're race Marxists. That was the title of the book.
I know, I've read the book. But what I'm saying, though, is that are they going to be on board for Viva la Revolution of wealth confiscation? I don't think so.
No, they're going to be against the wall. It's kind of grimly funny, but they're going against the wall.
Just the southern border wall, you mean?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, the communist wall where they put people down that they don't need anymore.
Okay.
This is what Mao did.
You mean they're going to be exterminated?
Yeah, that's what Mao did with his Red Guard.
Yeah, so, I mean, they are eat me last type. So let me ask you this. It's a totally speculative question. Without proper confrontation, that's not the right way to word it. Without defeating these people, in the end, who wins? The race Marxists, the trans Marxists, or the economic Marxists?
Probably the economic
you
Marxists
really think
ends
so?
Up in the end, yeah.
Why is that?
They're the most brutal.
But they have no power.
Well, they have no outward-facing power. It turns out that they probably have the largest reservoirs of money and the greatest access to actual military force.
You're talking about actual believers in economic Marxism.
I think you may have forgotten that the CCP exists for a moment.
But they're not. I don't know if they actually are true egalitarian communists, though. I think they use the mechanisms and the language of Marx so that they can actually create a fascistic oligarchy.
Well, I mean, that's...
I'm talking about actual ideologically believing...
Oh, no. Yeah, those people are already completely marginalized.
Yeah, okay. So we agree.
Right now, of those kind of in the culture war
space... Do you know what I'm talking about,
though? I do now. Yeah, the queer Marxists are going to win that for sure.
Yeah, okay. So we agree on that. Okay, so perfect segue.
Yeah.
James, see what happened with Bud Light? Still happening. See what happened with Target? Target's freaking out.
Target's freaking out.
Ford now has the gay Raptor. North Face has the tranny in the woods. Right? You got all... I mean, there is a built-in assumption that is completely wrong. That eventually these companies will stop this stuff.
Yeah.
If they start losing money. Why, James? Why is Target doing this? Why are these HR departments and these communication departments leaning in? You're chomping at the bit. Explain it to me.
I am so geeked. So you know what a cartel is? Imagine that we have a mafia, right? And the mafia is running cocaine or something through the neighborhood. And they're like, listen, Charlie, you're going to go take this bag of whatever and you're going to give it to it. And you're like, I don't really want to do that. No, you're not going to say that, right? You're just going to do it, right? Because you don't want to get whacked. Or, you know, nice Turning Point USA you have here. It'd be a shame if something happened to it, right? And you don't want anything to happen, so you go along. Some of our corporations are active, complicit players in this whole agenda, but a lot of our corporations are held hostage by a cartel. And that cartel doesn't use guns and bombs and firebombs like the old mob. It uses financial instruments primarily. So there are these scoring mechanisms, the ESG scoring, environmental, social, governance. Let's look at the S, social.
The S, which is the snake in the garden, right?
It is the snake in the garden. So what's down inside social? Well, one of the things is all this LGBTQ, queer,
the tranny stuff.
All of it, yeah. And so it turns out that the Human Rights Campaign, how do they figure out what your S score is? Well, the Human Rights Campaign has been publishing for 21 years now something called a Corporate Equality Index score. There's a healthcare equality index, a municipal equality index.
Most people have no idea this is happening.
That score means everything. Because your ESG rating comes off of partly off of that
Mao
score.
It's a social credit system.
And if you lose your ESG rating, you lose your line of credit. So you're going to hit a liquidity crisis.
But it's not that strict yet.
Well, for corporations, it is that strict.
Well, no, I mean, Elon got a bad let. He's fine. He figures it out. Meaning, like, not all your financing instruments dry up. But there's a fear of that, right?
I mean, yeah. They can make things very difficult for you.
Okay, let's take an example. Okay, Target.
Yeah.
What you're making an argument, though, is that they're doing this because they want the easy way financially and profit-driven. You're not saying that they actually believe this stuff.
I don't know for any given corporation for sure, but in all likelihood, they see a broader marketplace, not just their consumer marketplace.
Well, not their consumers don't want it.
That's right.
There's not an overwhelming amount of San Francisco lesbians that say, I want a Raptor. Ford Raptor. That is not the best-selling car in San Francisco.
Their ESG score is so important to them that they will alienate their customer base for it.
So you really think it's an ESG-driven social credit score?
100%.
Okay, so I'm not convinced. How much of it then is just HR departments that have been taken over by campus revolutionaries that keep on pushing out these ideas and eventually they pierce through?
Well, I mean, that's part of that. But the reason that the HR is that way is partly also because your ESG. Your G score depends on hiring the right people and having the right policies in your
HR
department.
Or just that the supply of people you get from campuses
are
revolutionaries.
You do have both of those things. This is why we talked about before, the Long March requires capturing education. So you get the people plugging into the system, and then you capture the system at the same time from the top down, and now you've got it squeezing at the middle. Where Target is, Target probably has some total crackpot. I mean, Bud Light had a crackpot working for it.
Sure. No. I don't doubt that. I just, what shocked me is that even though you see the backlash, the companies are doubling and tripling and quadrupling down across the board, right?
Well, not good enough. Did you see what happened with Bud Light just the other day?
Yeah, they lost their gay rating, right?
Their CEI, their corporate equality index score, went down because they didn't stand up for Dylan Mulvaney strongly enough when given the opportunity, is what the reason was. In other words, this is an extortion racket on our corporations.
So your argument, and I trust you 100% on this, I'm just not yet there convinced, is that the rainbow jihadis are going around in a racketeering operation to demand advertisements, messaging, and influencer campaigns heading into Pride Month?
Those are explicitly programs that are inside earning your CEI, so yes. Explicitly, you are going to make visibility a part of your marketing campaigns. That's part of how you get your CEI. You're going to apparently stand up for your brand advertiser or ambassador. If something, there's a backlash, that's part of it because they just lost their score.
So they've created this extra-constitutional corporate sort of Damocles that is constantly hanging over your company,
mm-hmm.
and then you have these beta male, soon-to-be-retired, 59-year-old white men that are running the company that want the second house in Barbados, and they're like, I don't want the problem.
Well, it's more than that, too, because your G-score with the ESG is going to be that you're going to give corporate bonuses for playing along to those 59-year-olds. They get bonuses if they do it, and they lose their bonuses if they don't.
So will they stop if they actually feel a check and balance? I mean, that's the question, right? Let me ask you this, James. Let me ask you the other way. Are you hopeful now that you actually are starting to see some companies collapse because of this?
Indirectly, yes. And the reason is because Senator Cruz, for example, has already said that he wants to haul the execs of Anheuser-Busch in front of the Senate and have him explain, why in the world are you doing this? Why is this happening? Because what has to happen is that the cartel has to get exposed. If you're going to bust a cartel, you have to expose the cartel. You have to give the people inside of it an off-ramp. You talk, we give you a deal.
Yeah, no, exactly. The drivers and the bag runners and the accountants, you give plea deals and immunity.
That's right. And so you start driving it up the chain until the ESG cartel gets broken over.
Until you find El Chapo or
exactly.
whomever.
And in this case, what it is we know where it is. It's hiding in Vanguard and BlackRock and these major investment firms.
Is it, or is it that the HRC controls them?
Well, they're using the HRC.
Who controls who, right?
I would assume that the banks are controlling the HRC. The HRC has created a score that they find very, very useful.
So you think all roads lead to Wall Street banks that want to see more trans stuff, more anti-Americanism, and they're using, like Larry Fink, the $10 trillion man, is using his company as basically a pension-funded Democrat super PAC.
More or less, yeah. The World Economic Forum is like the transmission that gets the power to the wheels, to the corporations, and to the governments. But that power is coming from places like the United Nations, the CCP, and these gigantic banks.
What do you have to say to the argument that now the economy is a little bit on the jitters, a little bit more fragile? It's harder to be woke, meaning your margins are decreased, right? And plus, Target has to bake in, you know, the BLM shoplifters every month, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to lose a couple hundred million to, you know, urban youth just stealing their stuff every single month. So they have to I can't do that or else we'll be called racist. I'm not kidding. That's literally baked into.
Yeah.
They're like, okay, we see a black come in. We can't tell them to, you know, stop shoplifting. Just for the record, people of all colors shoplift, but it's true that they're not going to touch a, you know, black person that's stealing something. So they're like, so they already have hundreds of millions of dollars they're losing for that. And now they have this huge boycott. And they're freaking out. They're having emergency meetings. So let me ask you a different question. What do we then do as conservatives, people with platforms? How do we punish and crush these people?
So the logic of punish and crush, I think, needs a perspective shift. We should keep the pressure on, but we should also be trying to get lawmakers to make those deals with them. How do you get our Republican leaders to step up and say, look, we're going to find a way out of, you're in a cartel, we're going to get the mob off of your back? That's what we need to be working on. As consumers, we need to be punishing corporations that are continuing so that we keep the pressure on. And if a company comes out, like if Bud Light comes out and says, you know what, we messed up. Buy Dylan Mulvaney. This is why we did it. We're held hostage by CEI, blah, blah, blah. Then we start buying Bud Light again. We start supporting companies that talk, only companies that try to throw the ESG cartel under the bus. There's no apology is good enough. They're throwing the corporate cartel under the bus.
That's fascinating.
Now we're in business.
So you really believe that this is, and that, no, you might be right. This is a python that is squeezing corporate America to act in a certain way.
I think there are a handful of corporations that have been promised monopoly status on the other side that are doing it willfully. And you find out who those are, and all of a sudden you're getting some work done. I think that pressure you're talking about, those corporations, Target probably wants out of this trap.
I want to tell you guys about something every single one of you can benefit from, and you guys need to change. It's who we use when we go to get mortgages. Look, I balance a lot of stuff. I'm traveling all the time, my show, and I recently needed to get a mortgage, to get something figured out. And it was a tough one, and I didn't want to go to those woke banks. My last mortgage we did, it was with a woke bank, and they were bureaucratic, and they donate to BLM and the gay agenda and all that stuff. And I said, what can I do? Hello, AndrewandTodd.com. They're Christian. They're conservative. Our worldviews are aligned. They're fabulous people. When I needed a mortgage, of course, I went to my friends, Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian at Sierra Pacific. And look, this is the first time I used them because, you know, we were just recently started doing stuff on the show and partners. I said, okay, let's see how it is. You know, we do a lot of things together. It's blown away. They respond within minutes. They walk me through everything. They took care of all those details I didn't have time for. And I said, boy, guys, I now see how great you guys actually are. Responsive. And yes, no more of this woke stuff. Stop using the woke banks. Oh, I want to refinance my home and I'm going to go to a bank that hates me. Stop doing that. Instead, go to AndrewandTodd.com. So if you or someone you know is moving from blue states to red states, AndrewandTodd.com. Have an aging family member that needs financial relief? Because you maybe a reverse mortgage, AndrewandTodd.com. Are you self-employed and finding it hard to qualify? Or first-time homebuyer? AndrewandTodd.com. Again, what I love, again, I'm just friends with them, so I could tell you, I have no other reason to say this except that it's true. They're fabulous. They work hard. We go out to dinner together. They're great people. So don't depend on those woke banks, the big banks. They do a terrible job, by the way. They're funding all the destructive stuff. They want centralized bank digital currency. They're all part of the Great Reset. This is a group of guys. They do a great job. And stop depending on woke banks. For what I needed, I saw it firsthand. They got it done for me. And it was very complicated. It was a thicket. It was a maze. It was a labyrinth. And they said, oh, you got to do this and this. And I'll make this phone call. We'll do this and this paperwork. And again, these other banks that I deal with, it's like, here's 955,000 pages to sign. And they don't call you back. And they don't work weekends. I had a problem with one of the things on the process because it was one thing that wasn't filled out. And they respond on a Sunday within minutes. You're trying to get a response from a woke bank on a Sunday. You'll say, sorry, no response. So check it out. It's AndrewandTodd.com. 888-1172, that's how you call them, and say Charlie Kirk sent you, you might actually get them on the phone. Again, they're value-aligned, honest, trustworthy, wonderful people. I use them, you should use them too. Super responsive, blown away, and I could say, if they're good for me, they're good for you. Love these guys. AndrewandTodd.com, 888-1172. And finally, some of you might say, oh, Charlie, bad time to buy a home. I don't know about that. You should look what's happening. Commercial real estate is one thing. Private, single-family home ownership, it might actually stabilize and go up in the next year. If you're young, it might be the time to get in. Think about it, pray about it. But most importantly, go to AndrewandTodd.com for all your mortgage needs. Great guys, AndrewandTodd.com.
So you got Target, Amazon, Walmart, the three big competitors against one another. Do you think there's an opportunity to make Target squeal?
I think that if I was a Target exec and I felt the pressures that I'm under, that I would very much be looking for an off-ramp. I might be very tempted by a plausible offer to be able to squeal if there's some, you know, substantial protections for me to be able to do so.
It's amazing because the media would call us conspiracy theorists, but it's all just out there.
I mean, the conspiracy happens at Davos like every year. It's like literally they brag about it. It costs $500,000 to sign up and go. It's a real thing.
So let's just think more broadly. I ask this a lot when you come on commonly. What can the everyday ordinary person do to do their part dutifully, obediently to fight against the Leviathan? Because it seems overwhelming.
I mean, we just saw that. If we do a focused boycott on a relatively small number, and it could be somewhat capricious, whoever comes out first, you're going to get the hammer, causes this pressure to come up. But we also have to be pressuring, talking to, reaching out to our lawmakers, our attorneys general, and so on. Everyday people can actually write letters to these people, you know, emails and so on, call their offices. there needs to be the pressure to haul these people in and start the lines of questioning. Start thinking of pathways, not your individual everyday, you know, Charlie Kirk shopping at Target, or not Target, maybe. I did that on purpose, sorry. But your average everyday person could be writing, hey, you know, dear Attorney General, what can you do to save American prosperity? Ford, like Detroit's already just barely on, like limping along, and now Ford's going to get hammered. How good is that for Detroit?
Where? No one buy Ford, okay? I don't care if GM is worse or Chrysler. Ford popped their head up first. They're done.
That's, I mean, this is kind of the pressure game. And when the pressure game gets played, we also need the other side, though, is where's the valve? And so we need to be asking, we need to be talking clearly about this. We need to be researching. Citizen researchers, citizen journalists are going to pull this all apart. Do your own research is the anathema to the, yes, to the regime. So somebody going and digging and finding out that the CEI score is relevant is what brought it to my attention. Now I'm talking about, now everybody's talking about the CEI 6 months later because some guy doing some research told me about it at a conference in September.
Does it give you hope that there's at least an enlightened sense of caring and activism, that there is a little bit of punch now materializing in,
yes,
this opposition?
Yes, very much.
I don't think that was here around a couple years ago.
It definitely
during
was not.
During Floydapalooza, these companies did whatever they wanted. And
yeah,
there was, I mean, you and I fought as hard as we could, but we were alone.
Yeah.
Now it seems like there's a little bit of spice. There's,
I mean,
a little bit of a zing.
Yeah, look at Anheuser-Busch waffling. They didn't come out with a big proud statement. They're like, oh no, what do we do? Look at Target, scared waffling.
No, Target's moving the kids section out. So
they,
someone asked
them
on the show, they said, what's the success look like? I said, chapter 11.
Yeah, exactly. That's a total possibility here. Or getting them in front of a Senate committee squealing.
Which, who knows, right? I mean, and it could be a Texas subcommittee. It could be an Alabama subcommittee, right? Because, I mean, they have 1,300 stores across the country, right?
It could be a shareholder revolt saying that whatever is going on here is...
By the way, their sales are down 5 to 7% in some of their key markets. And they're like, what the heck is going on? Well, what's happening is you said to your best customers, moms, we hate you.
That's right.
And we want your kids. We want to groom them. Closing, James, you got to explain, why are they go after the kids? Is this intentional or is this some sort of accident?
No, this is totally intentional. This is something it ties into everything we've been talking about. If you want to change a country through a revolution, you have to get the next generation on board.
Initiation.
You have to initiate them. That's right. That's, in fact, in queer theory.
No,
you
know, I steal it from you.
They do their pairs. Everything's binaries, male, female, masculine, feminine. But then one of them is innocence versus initiation. That's one of their explicit binaries that they play against. So they have to take childhood innocence away, but what they really have to do is they not only have to indoctrinate the kids, they have to separate them. If you were going to have a cult, if you had Charlie Kirk's cult, you know, what are you going to do? You don't want that people in your cult to go back to their family and them say, hey, get away from Charlie. He's messing with your head, man. You need to separate. No, your family's dangerous. So they need these kids to see their parents as potentially dangerous.
It's the behavior of a groomer.
That's exactly right. You have to separate the next generation from the previous one.
So there is an agenda from the Rainbow Jihadi Mafia. We want to have kids' swimsuits in Target.
So that there's a pathway of actions that comes down to one day they say something to their parents about their sexuality. Their parent says, not in my house. And then you have the fight, the split.
And then you have a schism.
And a schism. That's exactly right. And you build a red guard that will turn on their parents, just like Mao did with the kids in China.
This is already happening, though.
Rainbow Guard. We talked about that before.
We have 1 minute. You got to do this in 45 seconds. Drag Floyd. What do we have to be ready for in June?
We are going to see a crazy provocation in June from the LGBT universe, the queer universe. We're going to see drag queens everywhere with kids. If you rise to this and act in extremism, this is going to get turned around absolutely.
I totally agree.
Into a whole, you know, discredit the right, George Floyd, Summer of Love all over again, and expect these provocations to come hard and heavy and to target specifically.
So they're going to try Dragapalooza, okay? Dragapalooza is coming in June, where they want you to act in a way that is not characteristic to your values, and you're going to regret it. And then all of a sudden they say, see, this is why we need Patriot Act 2.0.
That's right.
Are you feeling burned out and a little tired? Look, I want to tell you about something that I've become a big believer in. And if you do not know about it, you got to research it. You could fact check me. It's NAD. NAD is a precursor for your body to be able to create ATP, which is basically the life force of everything that you do. And look, there's a lot of people out there that are promising energy and doing all this, but go do some research on NAD and go see actually how incredibly important it is for high performance to be able to go actually get to the next level. And so what does NAD stand for? Well, try to take a note here. It is nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. I did that pretty well, don't you think? NAD. It's a coenzyme that is central to metabolism. Again, don't take my word for it. Go watch a YouTube video or two or three or four and go fact check me on it. I've been taking NAD for quite some time. And people say, Charlie, how do you travel 2,700 days in a decade? How do you do the 300 days a year? How do you do that? Look, it's not only because of this. I eat well and do other things as well. But if you look at NADH, especially when it combines with CoQ10 and marine collagen, it boosts your body's cellular function. I would never tell you guys to go do something I myself did not do. And Strong Cell has been able to put together a scientific breakthrough in cellular health replenishment that combines NADH, CoQ10, and marine collagen. When you combine them together, you get mental clarity. And that's a must for me. It's not just that. It's for vitality. It helps your immune system. It's all good stuff. So go to strongcell.com/Charlie today and see for yourself. It's not a stimulant. It doesn't contain any caffeine. I'm talking about overall health from the cellular level. NADH has been called the anti-aging enzyme that helps with so many issues like brain fog, short-term memory loss, blood pressure, heart disease, blood sugar retention, and so much more. And look, it's not a magic pill. It's like, oh, I'm going to start taking this and I'm going to be super smart. No, it's an additive, an amplifier on people that want to get better. But I could tell you it makes a big difference. I've personally seen undeniable benefits from taking Strong Cell and engaging with NAD every day. So I had to partner with them. I vetted them. I checked out their ingredient profile. And do yourself a favor and give Strong Cell a try. Visit strongcell.com/Charlie today and use promo code Charlie and you get a special 20% discount on your order. Again, that's strongcell.com/Charlie. NAD is your body's ability to create ATP. Don't believe me? Go to WebMD, go to Science Direct, go to Nature Journal, NIH, YouTube. It's all natural. It's naturally occurring and you're giving your body more of what it already needs. Use promo code Charlie. Again, that's strongcell.com/Charlie. Don't forget your 20% discount by using promo code Charlie at checkout. strongcell.com/Charlie.
So they want Dragapalooza. What does that mean?
Well, what we're going to look at this summer is going to be the strongest provocations of the LGBTQ program that we've seen so far.
So let's just say, like, these people are so sick. What is their best case scenario? That a muscular, veteran, white Christian father wearing a MAGA hat goes and punches a drag queen and that drag queen dies.
Yeah, punches like or something shoots like, or something like that.
No,
yeah.
I'm not joking. Like, that's actually what they want,
that,
right?
That would be...
Like, it's a dad that says, you stupid pervert, and punches that person, and, like, the person goes into anaphylactic shock or something.
That's right. Because then you have the martyr to hand right there. You have George Floyd, but of the drag queen variety.
Are they going to false flag this, James? I'm not trying to get...
They absolutely could. I wouldn't be the least bit...
You've been talking about Drag Floyd for a long time.
Yeah, I have. That's right. Actually, we talked about it
at AmFest,
and the Media Matters had an article out about it before we got off stage. So you know we're right.
But it's 100% correct.
Well, that's why. They have to, like, try to scatter to the wind.
So are they going to try to then bring feds and try to bring the feds up against the drag trannies?
It's entirely possible.
And then to try to do what they did on January 6th. Don't take the bait, everybody.
Don't take the bait.
During the month of June,
it's so important.
You could speak, you could protest, but my goodness, understand, they're going to... All right, James, without me rambling, why? What is provocation? Why does it matter for them?
Okay, yeah. So the whole game, the if you read their operations manuals, one of which is called Beautiful Troubled, one of their core principles, it's literally beautifultrouble.org. Go read it. It's a book online that tells you how they do all their activism. You want to short circuit them? Why don't you learn what they do? It's no problem. One of their principles explicitly is your real action is your target's reaction. Their goal is to get you to overreact and to use it against you. And so they're gonna throw out, you know, Dragapalooza. And what you have to do is you have to understand this is an intentional provocation to try to get people to overreact. And you need to call it out. This is an intentional provocation to overreact so you can take our liberty. We are not going to walk into the trap. You need to be as clear as you can. If you're in a group, an organized group, your protests, you need to be disciplined. You
yes.
need to be organized.
You need to make sure the madness of the crowd doesn't consume you.
You need to know when to leave, to get out of there.
And understand that there's probably a Fed next to you wearing a MAGA hat.
Absolutely clear statements before you show up.
Yes.
Everything.
And look for the Ray Epps, who's allegedly a Fed from J6.
Yeah, we have to go into the drag show. We have to go into the drag show.
We have to go storm the drag show.
Yeah.
Let's go into the drag show.
Watch out for that guy.
No, but that's the real thing, though.
This is the real thing.
They want to have drag Jan 6.
to get real philosophical with you, whether it's Hegel, whether it's Marx, they believe history moves through what? Conflict.
Reichstag fires.
So they have to bring conflict to bear, and the bigger the conflict, the more they can move history. In other words, the more power-grabbing policy they can pass.
So is discipline the way that we prevent this, or we also have to expose it before it? Like, this is super important, right?
Exposing it is so... People think it's stupid and doesn't do anything.
I mean, I think it's totally important.
The second... Every person who's heard the Drag Floyd meme, I know this because I get texts and emails about it every time there's a story even similar to something that could be... Oh, Drag Floyd started.
So on June 1st, we need everyone tweeting, Happy Pride Month. Remember, pride is a sin. Paragraph down, right? Do not fall for Drag Floyd. How do we word this?
Drag Floyd
this month. Stay disciplined. Stay peaceful. Don't let the feds let you get violent.
Yeah,
right?
Don't get provoked. You got to think that there's strategic action and then there's reaction. And reaction is what they're looking for. Strategic action
because
is something
smart. Because they're
losing
without our reaction, James. They are.
Do you have any idea how foolish they look? So what they're doing only looks reasonable against somebody acting out crazy.
Right. Oh, that's correct.
Otherwise, they look horrible. They look monstrous. They look scary. They look poisonous. They look like fools as long as we don't give them the reaction that they're looking for,
wow.
At which point all of a sudden they look justified. This is, I mean,
it's
frankly,
deep stuff.
Charlie, if I might go Christian on you, this is turn the other cheek.
No, that really is.
Turning the other cheek doesn't mean just take it in the face. It's not what Jesus...
Right.
Jesus
yeah.
is not so stupid as to say, just let him beat you up. What turn the other cheek means is you insult me on one cheek, show him what a jerk you are.
Yeah,
hit the other
right.
one. Go ahead.
Exactly.
And
right.
you want to make them look bad by you staying centered. Jesus is based. Go ahead. Slap my other side of my face. Go ahead. You got the right? Take the left. Go ahead. You know, stay based. Let them... Don't let them beat you up or whatever, but... What you have to do is let them show their butts to the world without showing yours back. That's the message.
Absent a reaction, they're going to collapse.
That's right. They will lose the popular fight.
They already are. They are
big time.
They are descending until some person, either on payroll or on a PSYOP campaign or somebody that's paid, is going to go into the streets or who is provoked and is brought up, right?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden goes and punches a drag queen.
That's right.
Or whatever.
And so you might think of whatever on the, if you're in the conservative or whatever, but everybody to the even slightly left of center, kind of wavering Democrats who are finally kind of waking up, they're all going to get sucked right back into the beast the second something like that happens. And you might think those people don't matter. Those people are the core of what drops the moral authority out of their movement. If we lose them because we act like fools, They're gonna gain their moral authority back for 6 more months and run roughshod over all of us.
James Lindsay, everybody. We got to do our event. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Make sure you get a friend to subscribe and text this episode to your friends and say, we need to make sure we do not allow a Drag Floyd in the month of June. God bless you guys. See you soon. Thanks, man.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.